You can't build an organization without building other people. You can't make a lot of money without helping a lot of people. It's what I've always said, that you don't work in this industry for the money. You work for how many people's lives you can improve and benefit. And if you're doing that, the money is just a measurement of how many people you're helping.
Welcome to the Ken Brailsford Podcast. I'm Casey Moss, and today's show was meant to be the final chapter in a five-part series where I sat down and interviewed Ken about his 45-year career in network marketing. But we've had such positive feedback about the show so far that Ken has decided to expand the scope of the podcast to include so much more. And so we're excited to share with you a greater variety of content in the future. In today's episode, Ken talks about leadership and whether leaders are born or they rise up to the occasion and learn to lead. He talks about team building, finding and being the right mentor for other people, what are the characteristics and qualities of a good leader, developing your strengths, and so much more. So we hope you enjoy this conversation where Ken really drops a lot of golden nuggets of wisdom that he's learned over his career. Thanks for listening. So today what we wanted to do is focus on what it truly takes to be a leader. Moving things from being just a good person and being well-rounded and getting fear away from you and overcoming that, as we covered in the previous episodes, this one's really, how do you step up? How do you take all those things and become a leader? What are some initial thoughts on that?
Well, I think you have to be willing to take chances. You have to be willing to just step out before everybody else and do things. And I don't think that a person who's a leader in one thing may not be a leader in something else because he doesn't have the confidence or the capabilities in a certain area, but he does in another area. So that may make him a leader. I think there's some people that naturally become leaders. It's just in their DNA. But I also think there's some people, many people, if not all people, could learn to become leaders if they're willing to follow first. A good leader is, first of all, a good follower, and then be willing to step out and take a leadership role.
Okay.
Some companies in particular, network marketing, will develop leaders because if you want to succeed and go to the top, you become a leader or you don't go to the top. So there's some industries that will create leaders just in and of themselves. Some jobs will do the same thing. Because you're put in a certain position, you're expected to be a leader, and then you just have to step forward and do it. If you have the ability to learn and grow, then you can probably do that.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of interesting points there about whether it's innate, whether you're just born with it. So some people are just natural leaders, like you said, and some people and most people can really learn if they don't have those natural leader skills that you normally think of. You see somebody up on stage and you think, oh, I couldn't be that person. That's not me. But you don't have to be that person, but you could be the leader that you could be that's deep inside of you.
Not everybody starts out by being a leader. Yeah, some do, again, if it's innate to them. But generally, they do it by stages and steps. Maybe they're forced to do that to succeed. Maybe they don't want to fail, and so they're going to force themselves to get out of their comfort zone. The challenge that most people have is they won't get out of their comfort zone. And if you're going to be a leader, you're going to get out of your comfort zone more times than you want to. That's just the nature of being a leader. Some people, as they grow up as little children, learn to become leaders. In my case, I look back, I just surrounded myself with all those kids my age who were kind of outcast, who didn't have a lot of friends. And I pulled them into my group. And that way I became a leader because they looked to me to be their leader. And so I learned as I grew older to have those kind of traits, to be able to lead people if they wanted to. That comes back to one of the models that I have is lead, follow, or get out of the way.
I was just going to bring that up.
I believe that since I first heard it. I heard it from Ted Turner. many, many years ago. I think it was in a book that he wrote that I read. And I love that phrase, lead, follow, or get out of the way. A leader can do all of those things. He doesn't have to always lead. He doesn't have to always follow. And sometimes he just has to know when to get out of the way. That's what a leader is in a nutshell. And that's kind of what I've tried to do my whole life. I don't mind if someone comes along and if they're stronger in certain areas than I am, great. I can follow them if they know more about it than I do, and I'm happy to do that. On the other hand, maybe I know more than they do, and I'll step forward and take the leadership reins. You have to have good enough self-esteem that you don't always have to be the one in front. You can't let your ego get so big that you think you're better than other people, because you're not. Nobody is. And just realize that. And if you can realize that, say, I'm just like everybody else, then that's the way to be. And then when you become a leader, you're not leading just to satisfy your own ego. You're leading to be successful and help other people become successful.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about where leadership begins. You've got, you're leading. That means that there are others that are part of the group. So how do you build teams? How do you work with teams? What kind of advice do you have for people that they want to step up? They're part of a team, or they want to help build a team, and how do they step up and become a leader, and how do they encourage the team to get along and work together and to excel?
Well, one of the things, a good leader can take other people and pull out the best ideas from all of them, pull it all together, and then run with it, and they'll follow because they were part of the decision. That's also part of being a leader. And so you just have to be willing to listen to other people, and you've got a team and a group. Sit them down, and by the time you discuss through an issue, you'll have the best solution, and then everybody's ready to follow you.
Okay. So what would you say are some of the best qualities of a leader? Some of the ones that, think about the leaders that you've seen in the past, in your childhood, growing up, your professional career, but maybe even focus on network marketing. Some of the people that you've seen, some of the best qualities that they've had that they've brought to the table.
I think some of the best qualities is they have a love for people. They're humble. They don't let their ego get in the way of helping people. If you have some of those positive qualities like that, I think you'd be the best leader. Some people who thought they were great leaders, maybe they had a huge ego, and that will trip them up at some point. So it starts with humility again, just like I said, is one of the traits, caring about people. Wanting the best for everybody and putting those people at least on the same level that you're on. If you can do that with people, then you can become a leader. I look at some of the great leaders of all time, and they in some ways defied failure. Not that they didn't fail in their life, but they defied it, and they would work around it and move on to success. You look at Churchill during World War II. I don't think England could have survived without him. And yet when peace came, he was voted out of office, which was amazing to me to think about that. He was a great leader during wartime, maybe not such a great leader during peacetime. Hmm. So we all have our ways to be leaders and when we're supposed to shine and do things. I look at religious leaders. They're usually very humble, inspiring people. Look at Mahatma Gandhi, humble man. He won the freedom for India because he was willing to starve himself, if you really think about it. And he loved people. And he was willing to sacrifice everything that we would in the Western world consider valuable for the people of India. Some of his family that followed him in leadership in India didn't have those qualities, and they bled the country to death, I think. So it really boils down, what do you think of other people? Do you care about them? If you do, if you love them enough, they'll follow you if you're the right person to follow at the right time.
So it's not really about, and you mentioned about the ego. Hey, look at me. I'm out there here being the leader. And it's not really about loving other people and caring about them. So those people really don't go very far.
A good leader will pull other people up on the stage with them. I've always often said this, that You know, all of us are in a position where we can reach down, pull people up to our level. At the same time, there's people pulling us up to another level. There's always people smarter and better at leadership than we are and are anything in life, and we have traits that can help other people rise up and do better. We have to expect more from other people. A great leader will expect the best out of all their people, probably more than those people think they are capable of doing.
So you've got to be able to see the greatness that is in other people and be able to encourage them to achieve that.
Whatever their level and their abilities are, you've got to be able to get the maximum out. A great leader will get the maximum out of those people. If a person thinks that they're only good to a certain point, maybe you can bring them up a whole nother step or two above that.
Okay. So let's actually talk about some other characteristics that I know that you've talked about in the past. And this is one that I think that you live exceptionally well, and that is that you listen. You've actually learned how to listen, and through all of your experience, you may know more than most people in the room about something, but you're always willing to listen to what other information is out there. Where did that come from with you?
I don't really know where it came from. I think that, you know, it's been said we have two ears and one mouth. There's a reason for it. We should listen twice as much as we talk. Most people in life are just reversed. They talk twice as much as they listen. And that's a trait that you have to learn. I've learned over life, I don't have all the answers. Maybe sometimes I have very few answers. But all the answers are found in a group that you can surround yourself with in certain areas of competency. And the answer will come out. Ultimately, you may come in with a certain idea. You pick the brains of the people, say you're running a company. You pick the brains of those people over different departments, and you see a whole different direction to go that you didn't see before. A great leader will adopt the right way to go, even if it's not his way. Those with too big of egos will never listen to anybody else. I've never felt that I was the smartest person in the room. I've always tried to surround myself with people smarter than me. And very often, I've had people come to me and say, Ken, I know you want to do it a certain way, but here's why I think it should be done a different way. And if they're right, by the time they get through explaining everything to me, I will see it and I will go their direction. Again, because I'm not the smartest person in the room. They may be smarter, and I see that in their conversation. And I may be the president, they may be the vice president, it doesn't matter. I'm going the way that's going to benefit the company the best.
Well, I've actually experienced that personally with you, where you've got an idea of where something needs to go. I've come in with some additional information, and with that new information, you've decided to go a different direction based on the new information. So I've seen you do that.
I do that a lot, and that's one of the key things I attribute to any success I've had in life. That I've been able to listen and go other people's directions when I see that they're right and I was wrong.
Okay. So let's talk about you are a voracious reader. You are always eager to learn something new. You never really believe that you've got all the information that is out there. You're just always like a sponge. You're just soaking up more and more and more. The term readers or leaders, what's your attitude on reading and on learning?
I heard the statement many years ago, and I believe it's true, that when you go into the homes of different people, the richest people in the world have libraries, big libraries, and you go into a home where there's not a lot of material wealth and they have a lot of TVs. Now, it's a little bit different than that, perhaps, in our society today, because there is so much on television that's educational and productive. And I kind of characterize that with libraries. Yeah, I do read a lot. When I pick up a book, I'll usually have it read in my spare time in 2 or 3 or 4 days, unless I'm traveling or something. But sometimes when I travel, I take books and use it on read on the airplane or whatever. I think reading's important, watching educational programs important. I think it's almost a total waste of time to watch sitcoms on television or some of these things. Maybe they're good for us if we can get a good laugh, which may be healthy. I can't do a lot of that. But I do like to watch the news. I like to stay informed. You can get that from television and from reading books. There's a lot of geopolitical books that you can read and get ideas from and listen to people. So all of these things are important. You can't sit still and do nothing. And you have to fill your mind with good, positive things, and then you'll benefit. And that helps you in being a leader, too, going back to that topic. Because if you don't have anything in your mind, how can you be a leader? You know, you don't have any answers to anybody. And when you have answers, you've got to be more correct than you are wrong. We're all wrong sometimes, but you've got to have an understanding of what you, if you're putting an opinion out on something or trying to lead people in a certain way, you want to lead them correctly. So make sure you got the right answer.
So you're
saying, do that by reading and watching educational programs.
So you're saying it's really advantageous to be well-rounded and read lots of different things too.
Yeah, I read a lot of things. I read the scriptures. I even read fictional works sometimes because that's a good way to relax. And sometimes fictional works are written so well today, they're usually written with history in mind. So you can, the second benefit of some books is you learn about history and different things. So in a way, even fictional works then are somewhat educational. I don't read a lot of those, but I go through spurts. I read a few, and then I don't read any for maybe a year. But I'm always reading, always trying to learn and understand things.
Okay. So let's take somebody who really has not been a leader. What are maybe two or three things that you can think of right now that you would recommend for somebody who really truly does want to be a leader that they could do maybe in the next 7 days, the next 30 days, that will elevate them from being one in the crowd to one that has stepped up and said, I can lead, I can help, I can pull people along?
Well, people have got to trust you if you're going to be the leader, and if you want them to follow you, they're going to trust you. If they don't trust you, they won't. If you sit back and never say anything, they won't know if you're a leader or a follower. They won't know if they can trust what you're saying or not. You have to be willing to stick your neck out a little bit. Maybe someone will chop it off, but you'll learn in the process because it's a learning process. And if, you know, and I don't think anybody sits there consciously and says, I want to be a leader. I think it happens because they get into circumstances where they have to make it happen. And again, you have to be willing to speak up. And so to speak up, you've got to have something to speak up about that makes sense. So you've got to, it goes back to the reading and learning and watching people. I love to watch people and learn from what they're doing. I go to the gym every day. It's interesting to watch all these people doing exercises and just observe. Or when I go to Disneyland, you know, I don't particularly enjoy the rides like I did when I was a teenager or younger, but I like to sit there and watch the people and listen to them jabber along. I learn just from watching people sometimes. Part of becoming a leader is to watch people and see who's leading and why are they leading. So that's, observation is very important if you want to grow and progress.
So you need to be curious.
Got to be curious. That's what it boils down to.
Okay. All right. So taking on the mentor role, because I know that leadership oftentimes requires you to take somebody off to the side and say, okay, this is what I've done. You know, this is how I would recommend, or based on your qualities, how I think you could do things. What would you recommend for people to become better mentors?
That's a hard one. You can't be a mentor if the person on the other side doesn't want you as a mentor. Comes back to that trust factor again. Do they trust you, and do they believe that you know more than they do so you can give them good pointers and help them? Over my life, I've had a few people who have asked me to be their mentors. Probably had some that I've been their mentor, and they never told me I was a mentor for them. But if you care about people, I've always been one that'll just kind of speak my mind generally. And I'm not afraid to do that. So if I see a problem with somebody, if let's say they're an employee, and I've got hundreds of employees, but say they're an employee, I'm not afraid to say to them what they need to hear and what I believe. For instance, I was signing purchase orders in one of my companies this morning. I don't let them, this particular company, spend any money that I haven't approved. And so the logistics guy came in, and I said something to him that, hey, you've got to be finding better prices for us, your department. And I asked him a question about something. He didn't have the answer. He's got four or five people that work in his department. He didn't know what was going on. He's just bringing the paper. And I said to him, kind of in jest, but also I meant it. He knew I meant it. Look, I could hire someone for $12 an hour just to shove a piece of paper in front of me. I says, if you don't know what this is all about, all you're doing is being a paper pusher. And I think you're making more than $12 an hour. And he kind of laughed, and I said, maybe you're making 13. Then he laughed even more, because he's making a lot more than 13, and I knew that. But you got to be willing to tell people in a polite way. You can't be rude and obnoxious about it. But I try to tell people in a way how you can do your job better. It's hard for me to be a mentor in a lot of situations because I've got so many companies and so many employees and so many people. I don't have the time to do it real often. But often I'll be doing it. It just doesn't reach a lot of people because of my time constraints anymore.
Well, you just did that. I know that with Ryan Palmer, with Zija, and getting him prepped and ready to take on all the leadership roles. And he's been growing over the years to be able to take this on. But you definitely, I saw recently, take him under your wing and mentor him in a more intense level.
Well, he's my son-in-law, so it's easy for me to do that. But also, you have to be aware of a person's tolerance level for criticism, whether it's Ryan or somebody else. You can't push so much at them that they rebel and push back. You got to feed little morsels out at a time based on their capacity and willingness to absorb it or listen. And again, even when I do that, doesn't mean I've always got all the right answers. I've gone to Ryan sometimes with maybe things I think could be done a different way. And then when I hear it, because I'm not there all the time, I don't run the company's day-to-day business. And so he may give me some information then that makes me think, well, what I just told you is not the right direction either. So you got to be willing to learn, even if you're a mentor, because you can't mentor somebody if you don't have all the facts. And they've got to be willing to give you the facts, or that becomes problematic anyway.
Yeah. So let's talk about leadership style for a moment, because I think for somebody to be a good leader, they need to understand what their style is, because you can't, there's not just one way to do it, right? How would you qualify, or how would you describe your leadership style, and how would you recommend for people to be able to tap into their own style?
Well, you've got to learn what your strengths are. I know my strengths. I know my weaknesses. I was interviewing a guy today that I'll probably hire, and he's very qualified in a lot of areas. He's very strong where I'm not. And so you've got to know your abilities, your strengths. Now, I know him well enough now that if I hire him, I can give him direction and point him where I want him to go, because I know his strengths. I don't know all of his weaknesses. Maybe he doesn't have any in the business world. He's very good. But I see a lot of ways he can help me in the process too. I don't have the same education he has, and he doesn't have the same education or all the experiences that I have, but he has a lot that I don't have. So again, in being part of a leader and helping people, and knowing, you've got to know your style. And then my style is identify what I need from people and then expect them to do that and back off enough that they can do it. If they can't, over time, you either have to find a different job for them, or maybe you, sometimes it's better to just let them go and let them find their own level. That's a hard thing to say and do, but sometimes it's better for them.
Yeah. So let's talk about going forward. Not just so much about leadership, but what your experience in this industry, the network marketing industry, 45 plus years now. You've seen where it's been. You've been there at almost the genesis of the entire industry, at least in North America. What do you see are some of the key things that are going to happen going forward for the industry, and specifically how people can capitalize on that and make their place in the industry better?
Well, I think over the years, back when I started with Nature Sunshine Products, it took us $1,050 to begin the business. It was almost blazing the trail in a lot of ways. There were only a handful of companies. Didn't know how to do all of it, but it was a cheap way to get into a business. 1985, that was 1972. 1985 comes along, I go buy a business to get back into the industry. Cost me $25,000. Still relatively inexpensive. And then along comes 2005, when I started Enrich, really got it going. It took millions to do the same thing that had become so complicated. And I see what I really see the direction of the industry is. You can't make it in this industry without having millions of dollars anymore in deep pockets. I see a lot of more of the smaller companies not making it. It's the bigger companies that are going to survive. There's going to be a consolidation in the industry. The small companies, they can grow, they can do fairly decent for 2 or 3 years, some of them, then they're going to go belly up. I had a company that we talked to today, very good products, wonderful management team, and they're not making it, and they won't make it. So they're looking for a home for their distributors. And so I see a lot of things like that. Smaller companies are not going to survive. They're going to be absorbed by a little bit bigger companies, and the whole industry will grow. But then I also look on the regulation front. More regulations, more problems with the FTC, maybe even the FDA is going to come about. There's going to be more control. It's going to be harder to do the business. That won't be quite as profitable for the owners maybe as it was in the past in a lot of instances. So I see some of those challenges coming up, but there will be the few that can make it. There might be medium-sized companies now that can become large companies in the future. They're going to make it. They're going to be very successful. But I see those challenges. Fewer companies, fewer startups coming in. Capital won't be there for them. That's kind of what I see going forward in the next 5 or 10, 15 years.
Okay, so it's really important for people who want to do this industry to have a company that's got a good, solid foundation if they're going to make it, because a lot of these other smaller companies aren't making it, right?
And doesn't mean the products aren't good, doesn't mean the management team's not wonderful, but there's a lot of challenges to startups. They may not have enough capital, or they may spend it wrong to begin with. Or they just can't get the traction that they thought. Or a distributor thinks that he can run a business because he was a great distributor, and he can't. You just don't waste your time, you know, for 2 or 3 years and find out you're riding the wrong horse in the race.
Okay.
Get with a company that's stable and can make it. And you can go to the top in any company, no matter their size, how long they've been in business, if you want to pay the price for it, and we'll do it.
So on the flip side, because I want to talk a little bit more about where things can go for those that do have a solid home, that do want to put in that effort in, you know, personal development and overcoming objections and fears, as we've talked about, and learning those leadership skills that are necessary. What are the potentials?
Oh, as far as you want to go with it. Years and years ago, I met a guy named Bob Holker who at that time was the largest distributor in Shackley. He hadn't started out as the largest, but he was determined to make more money than the person that brought him in, who was at one point the highest paid distributor. In the kind of marketing plan, the unit-level marketing plan that they had, it's almost impossible for the guy down the line to make more money than the people above him, just the way it's structured. But over time, because of his persistence, the price he would pay, the hard work he would do, studying, learning, honing his skills, he became the number one earner above the person that brought him in. Hmm. And so anybody that wants to, that's going to pay the price, can go to the top. You can determine where you want to be. You get into the right company. Don't worry about the company. Don't try to figure out everything. Just go out and work. Years ago, I had a... this is my previous company. We had a wonderful weight loss product, and there was a gal living down in Alabama, and she loved the product. She got a hold of it. She loved the product. She was signed up. She could buy it wholesale. She loved it so much, she'd buy a bunch of it, drive it up the road to Tennessee to where many of her family and friends were, sell the product to them, come back home, order some more product. It's like almost like she was a traveling store. Go up, sell some more, back and forth. And one day she got a commission check. It says, where did this come from? She didn't even know there was a compensation plan.
Wow.
And she went on to be, here's this stay-home mother. She went on to become one of our top distributors just because she loved the product and shared it, but knew nothing about the comp plan for a long time. And even when she found out about it, she didn't focus on it. She just knew that it would pay her for her efforts. And she went and recruited people, built an organization, and did better and better. Women are great for multi-level marketing or network marketing because they can get in and talk to people that men can't. And she just went right to the top.
Wow, what a great story.
There's always room at the top for anybody, period, in any company. You just have to pay the price, be determined you're going to go there, and then just work your guts out.
Wow, okay. Well, that is the end of what we were going to have as a short little podcast series, but we actually have a few others that we're going to be releasing here at the conclusion of this that I think that it will be really interesting for people. So I'm not going to really talk about the details of what those are, but any final thoughts about this little series of podcasts that we've been talking about your experience in this industry and your place in helping to create what this industry has become? And I know that you don't like to take a lot of credit for it, but the reality is that you have helped shape this industry. What are some of your thoughts about where, about the industry as a whole?
Well, network marketing is the closest thing you can get to capitalism, pure capitalism there's left in the world. You don't have as many regulations as, of course, as I just said, there'll be more coming. But you're free to do and become what you want to do. You can start a business literally for a few $100s. Where can you do that? Can you do a brick and mortar that way? Do you even want to do a brick and mortar? Can you do an Amazon business without a bigger investment? No, and you don't know if it's going to sell or not. This is just a great way for everybody to augment their income and be participating in a great nutritional product that's going to make them healthier at the same time. So you get the right company, it can bring health and wealth and bless the lives of other people. Because you can't build an organization without building other people. You can't make a lot of money without helping a lot of people. It's what I've always said, that you don't work in this industry for the money. You work for how many people's lives you can improve and benefit. And if you're doing that, the money is just a measurement of how many people you're helping. That's the way you look at it. And the money comes along, it'll always follow if you're blessing the lives of other people.
Great. Thanks, Ken.
You're welcome.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview. To find out more about Ken, visit kenbrailsford.com.